Welcome to Oh, I Like That, a podcast about things we like and occasionally things we don't. I'm Rachel Wilkerson Miller.
And I'm Sally Tamarkin.
Good morning, Sally.
Hey, Rachel.
How's it going? What's the vibe?
Well, the vibe is like post-Christmas, pre-New Year's.
Mm-hmm. It's a very strange like limbo week.
Yeah, it's a very strange specific time of year.
Mm-hmm. So a few years ago, 2015 to be exact, which is not a few years ago at this point, I read an article on The Cut about Romjul, which The Cut describes as a Norwegian concept. It's their word for that week between Christmas and New Year. So it's kind of like the you're all alone in the office this week vibe where a lot of people aren't around. There's a lot of leftovers. Mm-hmm. It's like this weird, sort of strange time, especially in New York. So I was feeling a little bummed last night that we're going to not really experience the full Romjul this year, which I always look forward to because I never go anywhere for Christmas, and I'm almost always working this week and would normally be working in the office this week. And so I felt like it was the reward for staying in New York that you get to have a week of riding the subway with like nobody on it. And it's like that feeling of like, there's only a couple of us, so like, let's all eat lunch together, or, you know, we're gonna like duck out for a little while in the afternoon to go do something like a little bit different. I don't know. It's not that, it's like a very insignificant loss given everything that's happened in 2020. But I am like, oh man, Romjul, miss you this year.
Yeah. You know, I didn't even know Romjul was a thing. You told me that right before we started recording. And yet here I am mourning the loss of Romjul.
Because it's one of those things we all get. We have all experienced it. So
yeah, it's sad not to have the special week, which I've done different things in different jobs. Sometimes I work during the Romjul week and I'm like, man, this is the best choice I've ever made. Like, why would you ever take this off? You know, you get so much more done, like there's no one around. And then other times I've taken it off and been like, man, what kind of chump is working this week? And I think that what that says about Romjul is that there's kind of no wrong way to experience it. Except that this year it does feel a little weird. Definitely, like, I realized how much I was looking forward to Christmas when I woke up on December 26th and was like, oh man, we have to wait 364 days to do that again. It's a real
puzzle. Yeah, I think the holiday blues are going to be pretty hard hitting this year.
Yeah, pretty blue. One thing I want to just add about this period is that I was watching a conversation about Romjul evolve on Twitter. Did you notice this at all?
No, I didn't see it.
It was just basically like someone in my, not really in my orbit, but like in an orbit like three orbits away, said something about, I can't even remember if their opinion was that this week is awesome or this week is terrible, but whatever it was, it sparked a whole bunch of like quote tweets and replies with people kind of like weighing in. And I was just thinking like, I mean, look, I love to have an opinion, Rachel, as you know, but it just made me think like, I think this conversation is emblematic of the very fact that Romjul is a fraught time this year. Like, we're spending it arguing about whether or not it's great or terrible, because what else are we going to do with ourselves right now?
Exactly. That is, you know, arguing about an unimportant thing feels like a pretty decent Romjul activity. So I am glad everyone, whether they realize it or not, is honoring the spirit of this week. However, I think there are maybe better ways to spend your week.
I think that's an amazing segue to our first segment, where we're just going to do kind of like a year in review. We're going to do our top five media experiences, each of us, of 2020. Here's how I was thinking about this segment, Rachel, and you can tell me how you were thinking about it. Basically, these are five kind of transcendent experiences that stuck out among like all of our other media experiences. And there are things that may have like come out or occurred or been released in 2020, but they also might not be. It's more that we consumed these things in 2020.
Yes, exactly. After you said the word transcendent, that's how I started thinking about it too, because I was thinking kind of just like the best things that I consume, but that's slightly different. So yeah, these are the ones that sort of defined or, yeah, when we look back on this year and the things we consumed, how we spent our time is how I'm kind of thinking about them.
Totally. And my other like kind of bullet point for how I was thinking of these things is like, I thought back to like, what was I like totally eager to talk about with people? And like, I couldn't stop thinking about, and that's what my list is.
I love that. Okay. So I'm going to kick us off with sort of a late entry, and that is How To with John Wilson on HBO Max. Have you seen this, Sally?
Never seen it. Never heard of it. Totally excited to learn everything about it right now.
Okay. I'm going to tread very lightly because I do think it's one of those shows that's sort of like best seen without knowing a lot about it. And it's also kind of hard to describe. So it is a little show. It's very gentle. John Wilson is... he's the filmmaker, but he is mostly behind the camera. So it kind of consists of him taking a camera around predominantly New York City. And each episode is him trying to answer a question. So the first episode is small talk. And so it's just like him going around observing how humans make small talk, making small talk himself. But like as each episode progresses, it kind of like goes to like a bigger truth or something more poignant. But the thing about it that it's for, he's just so gentle, and it's all very earnest and wholesome in a way that is just like very soothing and very appreciated. It's like truly a balm kind of a show. Mm. Like you'll just feel so calm watching it. And the real joy of it comes in the fact that he is a master of pairing the visuals he's showing with whatever he's saying. So one of the ways I've been describing it to people is like, it feels like reading like a 2014 perfect BuzzFeed post where you've got like a couple lines of copy and then the perfect GIF to go with it.
Oh,
like
man.
Those old school BuzzFeed posts that like went mega viral because they were just so fun to read. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how it feels to watch it when he says something and then he follows it up with this visual that's like so expertly chosen and so unexpected that it's just delightful. So there's a real magic to it. And he's so good at this. You'll also learn a lot. Like one of the episodes is called Scaffolding. And mm-hmm. I learned a bunch about New York City scaffolding that I didn't know. And he has another one about furniture covers, like the plastic covers that people put on furniture. Yeah. And he goes to a place where they make those in New York City. They make custom ones. And it's like totally fascinating. And it's also just ends up being a show in a lot of ways that like is about New York City. And so watching that now is like, oh, man, I miss this New York. I miss just like a crowded like subway station, or just like the weirdness of mm-hmm. New York in all its glory is really captured in this. So it's like a beautiful, unintentional tribute to New York and just like a very funny, clever, just a nice show.
Oh, that sounds great. The words, like you said, like gentle and balm, and that's exactly what I want to.
I think you'll really like it. I think it's only 30 minutes long and there's 6 episodes, and like I wish there were more. It's a show I'd actually watch again because it's like just so pleasant.
Nice. Okay. I'm definitely going to get into it. I've never even heard of it, but I'm very excited.
Great.
I will go with my first entry, which is also a TV show, or it's a 4-part documentary series called The Reagans. Did you watch it, Rachel?
I didn't.
Okay. So this is on Showtime, which I now own. No, I subscribe to it because of one of the NXIVM documentaries. The NXIVM family of products is like the reason I subscribe to like several different like podcast networks and TV channels, it turns out.
I got you.
But anyway, so this is a 4-part documentary about Ronald and Nancy Reagan. And it really just dives very deep into kind of how he became a politician, how he formed his beliefs that his policy was based on, how he kind of became a tool of the right. I mean, willingly became a tool, how influential Nancy Reagan was in his like decision making as commander in chief. Mm-hmm. And it really, really goes in on his like on how important anti-Black racism and an absolute like loathing of the poor and a commitment to like criminalization of the poor and like cutting social programs are so important to his legacy. And they interview a bunch of different scholars, which you note when you watch that the scholars are all Black and people of color.
That's cool.
Which is cool. And also like notable in that it doesn't, you notice it because it's not always the case.
Yeah.
They also interview a bunch of people in his cabinet and some members of the press. And Also, Nancy Reagan had this astrologer.
I was going to be like, did they talk about the astrology? But then I was like, that's that's like the only thing I know about the Reagans in some ways. And I didn't want to say that, but now you know.
Yeah. She had an astrologer and she was like deeply committed to taking the astrologer's advice about like when big meetings should be held and when he should do certain announcements. Apparently he, at some point in his presidency, he stopped having press conferences more than like every other month because that like the astrologer was like making a recommendation about like timing that he was following. The other thing, so the big takeaway is that like Reagan gets remembered, I think, even by people who are like Democrats, like older Democrats, boomer types, as like someone who was like a model of an American president. And sure, maybe we didn't agree with all of his policies, but you know, at least he, I don't even know what it is. At least he's like an all-American whatever. I don't know.
I don't know. Whenever I hear that mythologizing happening as like, you know, Trump's behavior, this isn't the party of Reagan, I'm just like, isn't it though? Like, isn't it? He was just like, I don't know, an actor who got into politics and was like kind of a piece of shit at the end of the day. So
yeah,
I find it really strange the way that people on the right and left are just like, oh, but Reagan.
Reagan,
like,
I know. I know, especially because this documentary really shows you how he kind of like, I don't know if it's, if you could say like he invented dog whistle politics, but he like most certainly used it like very expertly. And it shows you like the extent of his like absolutely heartless neglect of people who are dying of AIDS, and also how much he lied, and also that his slogan was Make America Great Again.
Huh.
Yeah. So it's really good. And the scholars really, really break it down and sort of explain what Reagan was doing and how that kind of conflicts with like the mythologizing around him. And, you know, they interview people like people who were in the White House press corps when he was president about like, you know, kind of the way he treated the press and the way he like showed up as a president interacting with the press. It's absolutely fascinating. I was totally riveted. And even though it was like stuff that first of all, there's a bunch of stuff I didn't know, but there's also stuff I knew, but that was contextualized in a much different way. I thought it was awesome. Also, his son, Ron Reagan Jr., is in it a lot. And this dude has a lot to say about his parents. And the dude has been to a lot of therapy. And he has some things to say about Ronald Reagan as like, not just as like a father, but like as a politician and a president and as someone who sort of, it's so interesting because he describes how his father's attitude of like not wanting anything to be wrong and wanting everything to be just fine kind of contributed to, for example, how we reacted to the AIDS crisis. Anyway, give Ron Reagan Jr. some sort of recognition for like being valedictorian of therapy because it was pretty fucking amazing. Anyway, so that's the Reagans. It's on Showtime, and I highly recommend getting the like Showtime trial or whatever to watch it if you don't already subscribe.
Well, it sounds great. I'm actually right in the middle of a Showtime free 7-day trial right now because we wanted to watch Hustlers on Christmas Eve and that was the only way to do it. So maybe I'll let it go for the first month and pay for it and watch The Reagans.
Hell yeah.
Okay. So next up on my list is something I read. I want to be honest with everyone and say I didn't have a lot of things that I read to put on the list this year. I think in part because I read so much news and that's kind of like what was available to read this year. I tag everything and pocket after I read it. If it's like incredible, I tag it like best of the year so that I can find it easily at the end of the year and make a list. It wasn't totally short this year, but it was interesting how many of the things on my list came from January. And then they kind of changed the tone of them.
Totally.
But this piece actually came out this summer. It's called My Mustache Myself by Wesley Morris. And it was in the New York Times Magazine. And it like just, it came out of nowhere because like none of us knew it was coming. And so it was just this like really, really wonderful surprise. Wesley Morris is a Black writer for The Times. He is one of the hosts of Still Processing, which is a really good podcast. And this is a piece that is, it's one of those pieces that I love that starts out about one thing, but like blooms into this full statement of self. So it starts off with him talking about the mustache that he's grown this year in quarantine. And then it goes into the history of the mustache on Black men specifically. And it's sort of talking about the civil rights mustache. And then I don't want to spoil too much because it really is worth reading and getting there on your own. But the sort of third act of this is how how, like, what his mustache tells him about his own relationship to blackness. And it's just one of those beautiful pieces where the writer just, like, wrote every word, you know, like, mm-hmm. it just every single bit of it is so well done. And there are so many sentences where you're just like, I just want to sit and like read this again and again. So one of my favorites is, the civil rights mustache was strategically tolerant. It didn't advocate burning anything down. It ran for office and sometimes it won. Like, just the way he talks about race, civil rights, his own blackness is just, it's so good. The photos are beautiful. He looks great. He's in this wonderful pink turtleneck with a pink background. Like, it just is just such a wonderful piece that I loved so much and really recommend everyone read.
It's a wonderful piece. And like you said, it totally goes on this journey, and every part of the journey is like incredibly done. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I saw this on your list, the thing I remembered most was the photo of him at the top where he's, mm-hmm. he's looking directly at the camera, and he looks so like vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And like, there's so much vulnerability in this piece. I don't know. It's just so good. I mean, vulnerability in like in the way you want like anyone writing anything about themselves to be. It's mm-hmm. just a beautiful piece of writing.
Yeah, it's so well done.
I also didn't do a ton of reading this year, but I did play a video game. How's that for a pivot?
That's really good.
I did play a video game that has a huge amount of like reading in it. So, and after I played this game, I would feel like I had read for a while. So
okay.
I thought it should come after your reading recommendation.
That makes total sense.
Okay. So this game is called Disco Elysium, and it actually came out in 2019. I played it in 2020. So this is a video game where you wake up. You play a character who wakes up with a wicked hangover and also amnesia, and cannot remember anything about himself or where he is or why he's there. You slowly start to gather clues about who you are and why you're doing what you're doing. And it turns out that you are a detective, a cop, and you are solving a murder mystery.
Okay.
And it's really hard to describe this game because it's extremely weird. But basically, as you go through the game and move through the world and talk to people, various thoughts occur to you. Thoughts about the world, thoughts about the way people interact with each other, thoughts about yourself. And you can choose to integrate those thoughts into your character or discard them. And so you can be someone who like embraces socialism. You can be someone who embraces neoliberalism. You can be someone who's kind of a nihilist. Mm-hmm. And all of those decisions you make influence your options and choices in the game. It takes place in a fictional European city that has seen kind of a failed revolution. It's like a very deep exploration of workers and workers' rights and like what rights workers deserve and who gets to have hope for the future and who gets to like who deserves to kind of call a city their home and who is a threat to that home. I mean, it's very like it also interrogates like what it means to be a cop as someone whose responsibility is like perpetuating the social order. It's just like you can replay it a ton of times. There's an absolute like all you do in this game is you walk around, you talk to people, and you read text on the screen. So if you're someone who like this sounds kind of interesting, but you're not into video games, you can play this like because truly all you're doing is like pointing and clicking. You can get it on your PC. It is either out on PS4 and Xbox or will be soon. I can't remember. And you know, I don't often like recommend media where you play a cop. but the exploration of what it means to like be a cop, I think is, and people have talked about this online and I know some people don't agree with this, but I think kind of is worth the price of admission. And the fact that it takes place in a totally fictitious universe and totally fictitious country, I think also helps. But truly, I do think that there's like a real like examination of like policing and criminalization and poverty and I don't know, just sort of like every social and political situation and thought you can like imagine has been like integrated into this game for you as a player to consider. And I just think it's like, I don't know. It's like astounding. Like I feel like a little bit of like a ridiculous booster for this game, but I just think it's like, I think it's like probably in the top five like media experiences I've ever had.
Well, that sounds great.
Yeah. So it's Disco Elysium, and we'll link to it and everything we mentioned here in the show notes.
So the next thing on my list is going to take us back to January 2020, which is a lifetime ago.
It really is.
And that is Cheer on Netflix, which I was really surprised to realize was 2020 because it feels like it must have been like November of 2019. It just feels so long ago. I think a lot of people probably watched this at the time, but if you didn't, it is, I believe, a 6-part series, might be 8 parts, but it's on Netflix. It follows a really, really great competitive cheerleading team at a school in Texas, and they tend to like win nationals or come in second every year. And it follows their journey to the national competition over the course of the season. I think like Caroline Moss recommended this to me. I don't need a lot of pushing to watch something about cheerleading. Like, mm-hmm. I think it's a great sport. I like love watching stuff like this, but this show is like really excellently done and very quickly reveals itself to be a show about trauma ultimately. Mm. And both like the physical trauma of being a cheerleader and the injuries that these kids sustain and the risks that they take and the things that they do to their bodies for something they love, but also, you know, the trauma in their lives that has gotten them to this point where cheerleading is truly a lifeline for them, and sort of the ways they put their lives on the line or their health on the line or their bodies on the line because cheerleading is what they have and what they need to get out of it. And so it's just a really sort of devastating portrait of, you know, people who really are at high risk and who need this as an outlet and as a lifeline. But it's also just like fun and moving and funny and interesting and, you know, sort of nerve-wracking because, you know, by the end, it's like, are they going to win and are they going to be safe? You know, people get injured all the time, mm-hmm. like really, really gruesome injuries in cheerleading. And it was so gripping, like truly binged it and like recommended it to everyone immediately because I just wanted to talk about it more. Like it was just such an all-in media experience that I really, really enjoyed. I do just want to mention for anyone who hasn't seen the show, since it aired, one of the cast members, Jerry Harris, has been arrested and charged and pleaded not guilty to several felony charges, all of which involve sexual abuse and exploitation of teenagers when Jerry was over the age of 18. I'm going to link to the New York Times article about it in the show notes because I don't really want to get into the details on the podcast and put anything triggering in this episode. But if you're thinking about watching it and this gives you pause, I would say read this article with sort of the note that it is, you know, pretty dark stuff and that might change how you feel about this show. And that's totally reasonable.
Cool. Okay. That's a good recommendation though. I think it's the last thing I remember everyone talking about and being excited about before the pandemic.
Yeah.
It's kind of like I can't remember a thing that everyone was like talking about except for coronavirus starting mm-hmm. like a month after it came out or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So a nice thing from the before times.
Yeah, agree.
Okay. So my next thing is a podcast called California Love. It is hosted by a writer at the New York Times named Walter Thompson Hernandez. It's on the LAist network of podcasts. LAist podcast network. I don't know why I said network of podcasts. And it is, so Walter Thompson Hernandez grew up in Los Angeles, and each episode, it's kind of like a mix of like reporting and like autobiography and memoir. He kind of like takes us through the Los Angeles he grew up in and just talks about what it means to have a really, really strong sense of place and of hometown when that place and that hometown is Los Angeles. It's really beautiful. The sound design is amazing. Walter Thompson Hernandez is absolutely magnetic and the stories he tells are amazing. There's an episode where he interviews his mom. That's just beautiful. It's just like, I feel really strongly about my hometown. And so I feel like I really relate when other people, when I saw that, like, this is someone who feels so strongly about like thinking about his hometown that he made a podcast, I was like, okay, that's going to be for me. And I can't recommend it enough. I think it's like 8 or 9 episodes, and it's like kind of a love letter to Los Angeles, kind of a tour of Los Angeles. Like it's like very difficult to really sum up exactly what it's like, but it's a beautiful show. And if you didn't catch it this year, I definitely recommend like getting into it. Each episode is like, I think between 40 minutes and an hour, 30 minutes and an hour. And it's just great. I just can't say enough great things about it.
Is it like a contained series with like 8 parts, or is it ongoing?
It's a contained series with 8 parts. My greatest wish and hope is that it keeps going, but I get the impression that like he has a lot of other projects and is writing books and reporting on things. And so he talks a lot about what his relationship is like with his mom, who moved from Mexico. And, you know, he explores kind of his identity as someone with a Black father and a Mexican mother. And it's just like, there's just like a lot of really beautiful, interesting things going on.
That sounds great. I'm sold. I'm going to check it out.
Yeah, get into it and please report back.
I will. Okay, well, my next two recs, I think I'm looking at your two final ones. I'm looking at mine and I'm just like, wow, you can see how I used media this year. Okay, so my next rec is reality TV as a genre, because it is like difficult for me to just pick one show. And because when I do think about like my 2020 and like being indoors at home all the time, I really do think of the reality shows that my girlfriend and I consumed that have really helped and have brightened our days and have been just like a I don't want to say a joy, but like have just been really helpful in terms of escapist media. So the first one, when I think of the early days of quarantine, is Drag Race, which I had never seen before this year. Or maybe I had seen like 3 episodes of like the last, like 2 All-Stars ago, and was like, this is fun, but like whatever, you know, like I just kind of like didn't stick with it. But we started watching season 12 from the beginning. It was a great season. These queens were so talented, so fun, so funny, and just brought so much. And we really looked forward to Friday nights watching it. It was really something that like helped a ton. And I wrote an essay about this for Vice that I can link to, but there was just something about like this like colorful, beautiful, funny world, because I think that's the other thing that I didn't really realize going into it, is that these aren't just like really talented makeup artists and, you know, who can create a cool look. It's like that they have to be like true entertainers in every sense. And so it's just a really funny show because they're all really funny and really just joyful and exuberant in a way that was so helpful and remains helpful. And what I loved about it is that after watching that, it was like, oh, now I understand how this works. And so I can watch old seasons and I can start following them on Instagram and watching their YouTube channel. And so like that has like, it has just opened up this whole other world of entertainment that has been like such a just wonderful part of 2020 for us. So that's a big one. And then Real Housewives of Potomac, which I think I've talked about with you before, not on this show, maybe elsewhere, but another one that I got so into that I always recommend to people. And we watched a bunch of different Real Housewives this year, but Potomac is the one I always say start with season 2, then go back and watch season 1. So that was really great to get into. I think it really scratched the itch for gossip this year and for like low stakes other people's problems that we've really all been missing this year. So having that was great. And again, it like opens up this whole universe, a new fandom, new things to follow and get into. So that was great. And then where would we be without Selling Sunset?
Literally nowhere.
I know. I mean, I think personally, I'm thrilled that for the two of us, Selling Sunset is what led to like one of my favorite group chat of 2020, which was like a bunch of people who loosely knew each other, united in a group thread about Selling Sunset that now has become so many other things and has been like a delight and a joy this year. But also Selling Sunset is just like a delightfully bonkers reality show that it was thrilling to get into and then to watch everyone else get into it and like have that be the thing we were all talking about this summer in August.
God, Selling Sunset has given us so much.
It really
has. It really has, yeah. Yeah, the group chat is definitely also one of my, like, if we were doing like 6 transcendent experiences 2020, that the group chat would be in there. Selling Sunset and Drag Race are two that I also really, really appreciate. And there's just, I tend to get into things that have a lot of like world building, where there's just like a lot, there's just like a really rich universe there. And Drag Race and Selling Sunset kind of have that. Like they kind of like meet that requirement. And, you know, they bring different, I feel like they bring different kinds of like entertainment and like absorption, but they both succeed in like absorbing you. And Drag Race has been a really big part of my relationship with my partner, because when we got together, she was really into it and I'd never seen it. And she tried to get me into it and I like couldn't really get into it. And then we watched like this one specific episode of like the second or third season, and I became completely obsessed. And, you know, we've since seen a bunch of the queens perform live, and we I have like Drag Race mugs. I got her like an autographed picture of a queen for her birthday one year. So that also, we've like fallen off in recent years, but it holds like a very, very special place in my heart. And it's just, when you need comfort viewing, at least when we do, like that's one of the first things we turn on is Drag Race.
Yeah, it just, I think, you know, since I've been watching it, I've been reading about the history of drag and like recognizing the role that like, I mean, like, I'm not going to say anything profound here by being like, comedy helps people in dark times, but like this specific type of comedy, which is like, it's like sort of over the top in a cartoonish way, or like, I look at this and I'm like, oh, I understand like what like clowns in the circus are meant to do by this like over the top cartoon, like joyful humor. And I think just also the queerness of it is like so special. And so like, there's just not a lot of things like quite like drag, and Drag Race is like a well-oiled machine now that has spawned so many other really wonderful things. And so getting into any of the many forms of drag that you can now access on the internet, highly recommend it, but Drag Race is a really good place to start.
Yeah, absolutely. So there is a game called Queers in Love at the End of the World. It was created by Anna Anthropy, and it's free. You can get it. We'll include a link on the show notes, but it's hardly even really a game. What it is like, there's just words on the screen and you have 10 seconds to click through and make some choices. And it's basically like, you have, well, actually, let me read what the creator wrote of the work. If you had only 10 seconds left with your partner, what would you do with them? What would you say? It's a game about the transformative, transcendent power of queer love, and is dedicated to every queer I've loved, no matter how briefly or for how long. And basically, what happens is you get some text on the screen that says begin, you click begin, and you have 10 seconds till the end of the world. And you get to decide if you want to say something to your partner, if you just want to hold them, if you want to kiss them. And every choice you make obviously begets another choice. And you can't really get through that much before 10 seconds is up. And it's just a really beautiful, sad, like simple exploration of, I mean, I thought about like how powerful it is to like love someone and be loved back, and what it means to think about how you would spend your last 10 seconds on earth with them, which it feels really dark, but is also really lovely to me. And it really kind of reminds me of like, we had this conversation over text, Rachel, about San Junipero, the episode of Black Mirror, which, you know, we were kind of going back and forth with your girlfriend, or I was, about like, is it sad or is it happy kind of? And I sort of feel like it, if you're the kind of person who thinks a game about the last 10 seconds you spend with the person you're in love with is happy, then it's happy. But there's like a happy sadness, or like a sad happiness, just like sort of thinking about what it's like to confront the end of everything, not alone, but with this person that you love and who loves you back. It's like devastating, but also beautiful. Again, it's free. It takes 10 seconds, but of course I recommend like playing it repeatedly and clicking on all the different things and seeing how it ends each time. It's called Queers in Love at the End of the World, and we will link to it in the show notes, and it's beautiful.
That sounds great. I'm cautiously excited about it. I'm like, is this going to bum me out? Is it going to be a bummer in the right way?
I'm not quite sure. Yeah, that's the correct attitude. I would say like only get into it when you're like sure you can deal.
Sally, I know it's my turn to go next, but I'm looking at what you have as your final one, and I think you should go next for reasons that will become obvious after you do yours and I do mine.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, so my last pick for a transcendent piece of media from 2020 is the book Are Prisons Obsolete by Angela Davis, which was actually published in 2003. This is a short book. It's like 115 or 120 pages. You can actually read all of it online. It's in PDF form, and I believe not illegally. I don't think it's like pirating. I think it's like meant to be accessible. It is a book that basically asks the question, are prisons obsolete, and kind of answers in ways that kind of get you to think about how prisons and the way that we think about punishment and surveillance and discipline and criminalization are all sort of interwoven and related to each other, and also so deeply woven into like the fabric of our country in like material ways, but also in just cultural ways. That like one of her big points is that like we can't even imagine a world without prisons, because imprisonment and carceral punishment is, and carceral like discipline is such an important part of our, like of just like of the American way of life, that even it's challenging to even imagine a reality where we admit that prisons are obsolete, and that like the police are obsolete, and that these things like don't work, and that they cause more harm than good. And one thing I love about reading Angela Davis is that like, or hearing her speak, she thinks in a way that it's like, as someone whose brain has been totally turned to mush by like the last year / the last like 5 or 6 years, all I can say is like mind explode emoji. That's like the only thing I can think of that like describes it. But she just thinks of things like, she has new thoughts. Like, I don't know how she does it, but she like imagines things that no one's ever imagined before. She's really brilliant. And she breaks it down here in a way that's like just so straightforward. And she's like, she's sort of like, listen, like you can't imagine what this would be like, because it's impossible to imagine our country any other way. But I'm going to like walk you through why we must imagine this, and mm-hmm. why we must imagine this in a way that allows us to work towards it. So if you've been like noticing the conversations people are having about like abolishing the police and abolishing prisons and stuff like that, and you're kind of looking for someone to like blow your mind and break it down, I would say Our Prisons Obsolete is great, because it's brilliant, and it's also 115 pages, which to me feels like a not too intimidating length.
Yeah, definitely. I bought this summer after you recommended it, and just need to sit down and read it, because I think 115 pages my mushy brain can actually handle. And
nice. Okay, so having said that, what is your last thing, Rachel?
Okay, so mine is the Architectural Digest YouTube channel does a series called Open Door, and it is basically celebrities giving tours of their homes. The first time I watched it, I thought it was going to be like, oh, these celebrities are chosen because they have like really special, like Architectural Digest-esque homes. Like they're going to be super aspirational. They're going to be really like well done and chic. That is actually not the case, as far as I can tell. I think it's more about like, which celebrities can we get? Who wants to do it? Like, they're showing you their home, whether or not it's an enviable home. And so these videos just cover a huge range of styles, of types of celebrities. There's athletes, there's actors, there's singers, there's a lot of different types of people. And they're so fun to watch. I actually think we got into these after Selling Sunset, because it was like, I need my like over the top LA real estate fix, which these totally deliver on. I actually have a blog post as a draft that I need to publish, which is just like my guide to like the good, the bad, and the ugly of these, because some are really beautiful and really well done. And then others you're just like, oh, you have all the money in the world and this is how you chose to spend it. And it's like infuriating, but the good kind of wanting to be mad. So yeah, it's just like every time there's a new one, it's super exciting. We've watched like probably almost all of the old ones, but it's one of those things where there's a huge back catalog to work through, which is really nice right now. And now like new ones are coming out pretty much every week. And every time there's a new one, it's so exciting. If you watch a bunch, you'll also start to notice the tropes, which is like, you know, every picture, or sorry, you'll start to notice the tropes is like every home or many of the homes have like black and white pictures of, you know, Marilyn Monroe. Actually, you'd think that like isn't a thing that you'd see outside of college dorm rooms, but celebrities love that. They love to talk about their art, you know, the art that they have on their walls and how they chose it. They're just, celebrities are wild. And it's really, really interesting to hear them talk about how they decorated their homes.
This, it's like kind of a grown-up version of Cribs.
Yeah, it absolutely is.
Yeah, I just want to say that like selling Sunset, I feel like the homes that they're selling and touring and showing to people are like kind of the background character, mm-hmm. you know, like mm-hmm. you don't see them. You I kind of feel like you don't see them enough. Like,
I agree.
Because they're focused on like the people and the relationships, but you want to be like, wait, hold on. Did I just really see that in this right. house? Is that mm-hmm. really a thing? Is this a way someone lives? Mm-hmm. And so to get just that.
Yeah.
Mwah, amazing.
You also occasionally get, you know, the celebrity will have their spouse in it or their, you know, even a sibling in some instances, and you'll get a peek into their relationships for better or for worse. Sometimes you're like, wow, I cannot believe you two hate each other this much. That's really, really remarkable. And you're just putting it out there for the whole world to see. Huh. So imagine that. Yeah, it's really wild. So we've watched a bunch of those this year. It's another one that when I think of like what we've done in quarantine, I think of those house tours. They've been great. I think also a lot of us this year being inside all the time, it makes you think about your home and like how you want it to look. And so there's also that aspect of it that it is, it in some instances, it's genuinely inspiring. Like you're like, oh, that's really cool. I want something like that. I will say those are fewer and far between, but that's also a nice bonus of watching them.
Absolutely. Yeah. We've watched a couple, but I see us getting much more deeply into these.
So our second segment today is going to be five stars, where we talk about something that we really love, but we're doing it end of the year edition. So we're going to talk about some of the recommendations we have for this year that, again, were like transcendent things that we bought or tried and that we highly wholeheartedly recommend. Sally, do you want to kick us off?
I would love to. You know how much I like to talk about life-changing hacks and products. So I'm very excited to tell the world about walnut shell cat litter, Rachel.
Wow.
I know that that's a string of words you didn't expect to see altogether.
It sure is.
So we got a cat about a year ago, actually. And the thing that I was kind of like most neurotic about was like cat litter that he was going to like and respect, because as mm-hmm. you may or may not know, if cats like are not into their litter situation, they act out in ways that involved.
Wow.
Yeah. So I wanted something that worked for him and also worked for us. I went through a couple different kinds of litter. My friend Zara recommended it. It's made of crushed up walnut shells.
Okay.
Now, let me just say that, first of all, it's much lighter than litter that's made of like, I don't actually even know what litter is made of, rocks. I don't know.
It's like gravel or something.
Like gravel, yeah. Yeah. It's a lot lighter. It contains, I'm going to get into talking about cat poop for a second. So just bear with me. It contains smells really well. It clumps together immediately. So you can scoop immediately. And it also just, it just like doesn't get real gross as quickly as other litter. And between that and how light it is, like not having to lug like huge bags of it up and down and changing the litter and having it be kind of a lot of effort, mm-hmm. this cat litter has really changed my life. Now, it is a little bit more expensive than other cat litters, but it also lasts like a lot longer because you don't have to change it as often. And mm-hmm. and I'm a pretty compulsive litter changer. So okay. I promise you that I am not a neglectful cat parent saying that. Anyway, walnut shell cat litter, I don't think there's a particular brand you need to get, but just like if you have a cat, get into it. My next transcendent purchase from this year are masks from Sock Fancy, which I take it sold socks before the pandemic and then pivoted to selling masks. I've tried a lot of masks. These are definitely my favorite. They have a pocket for a filter. They have a little clippy thing mm-hmm. over your nose. They have adjustable ear loops so you can, you know, loosen them or tighten them at will. They fit my face really well. They're very comfortable and they're snug in all the right places, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. highly recommend them. Sock Fancy masks. My next two are not products. They're just kind of things that I think everyone's been doing for years, but I discovered in 2020. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you know about this, Rachel, but Instagram stories.
Heard of them.
Yeah. They're a thing you can do where you post a thing and it stays up for, I think, 24 hours. Mm-hmm. They have a thing called a close friends list. Again, uh-huh. this is not a thing. When Instagram stories came out, I was like, I'm at an age where I can't learn another thing on this app. Mm-hmm. So it's just going to have to pass me by. It turns out that if you want to like update, so I've had a couple situations this year where I've wanted to like keep a bunch of people posted about how I'm doing, but without having to like text and call and FaceTime all the time. Turns out you make a close friends list on Instagram, and stories are a perfect way to kind of give people like daily or weekly updates about a thing. So get into it. Instagram stories for life updates for your close friends. Mind-blowing recommendation. I know. My last one is something else that people might already know about, but totally blew my mind when I discovered it like 2 weeks ago, which is the Roku remote app, which I have on my iPhone. And you, first of all, it has a keyboard, so you don't have to do the whole thing where you're like moving. And every time I search for something on my Roku TV, I think to myself, surely there's a better way to do this than navigating to each letter. There is. It's the Roku app, and it lets you use your keyboard to search for things. For some reason, the remote is really hard for me to keep my hands on, but because my phone is like basically a extension of my body, when I'm using it as the remote, I never lose it. And it does all the things the remote does. I highly recommend it. You can turn the TV on and off with it. Real life hack for me.
I started using it after you recommended it, and it is great. And another thing that you can do is you can do voice search with it. So if you want to not have to type things in, you can take it to the next level and like hit the little microphone button and then just say search season 12 of Drag Race, and you can find it very easily. So that is another really great bonus. And yeah, it's I have to agree that it's a very good app.
Now that I'm getting into Instagram stories, I think maybe 2021 will be the year I get into searching for things by voice, which is like not a thing. I never use Siri or anything, but maybe that's on the horizon.
I don't either, but I do think it's helpful for searching for like specific things within something like this. I have a Fire Stick that I don't use very often, but one of the best things about it is that you can search by voice. It's so convenient. So yeah.
I love that. Okay. So those are my top three recs. Rachel, what do you got?
Okay. So my first one is one of those purchases that we made in January that like really turned out to be a good one that we did not know would be so useful. And that is wooden TV trays that are the kind that like, they're like big, they're not like a lap desk, but they're like a big thing that stands on the floor that like collapses. I'll link to them if what I'm describing doesn't really make sense. But if you picture like 1950s people eating a TV dinner in their living room, like that kind of television tray.
Oh, nice.
Like,
okay.
So I was staying at my girlfriend's studio a lot, and it's a studio, it's very small. And I said like, oh, it might be nice to have this for like, if we want to sit and eat on the couch, like have something to put our food on. Or I don't even remember exactly why. I think that was the main reason. But when we started staying there full time in, you know, the end of February, beginning of March, they became so helpful because they're collapsible ultimately, but they're also really lightweight. So you can just move them around a lot. So it becomes a way to like reset your space or like create a table where you didn't have one before. So like when we, one of the things that we would do is at the end of the day, we would like move a TV tray to the end of the bed and pull the computer monitor over to it. And like, that's where we would set up to watch Drag Race or all the other things that we were watching. So like, it became like a little entertainment center, and like, you can just sort of use it in multiple ways. Like if you are there, I did a bunch of like distanced TV appearances this spring and summer. And so like, I could set one up wherever I wanted, so the background was nice, and then like put books on it to like create a perfect little, like you are well framed. So if you need to be on a Zoom call where you like actually look really professional and good, you can like move it anywhere. So it's like little things like that. Like the flexibility was so helpful. I think we got the two for like $40 or $60. You can kind of get them from any major, like, you know, a Walmart, a Wayfair, like any big retailer usually sells them. Highly recommend.
That sounds awesome. We occasionally will like eat while we watch a movie or something like that. And the distance between like our mouths and the coffee table is just like not, it's not a thing. And I wonder if it's time for us to invest.
Yeah, I think they're really helpful in ways that like you don't totally expect, but are, again, they're collapsible. They can fold under the couch, which is so nice when you're in an apartment.
I think I just gave the impression that the way we eat is by putting our entire face on the plate, but whatever, that's fine.
The more important thing is you gave the impression that you only rarely eat on the couch, which is like really impressive. And I'm happy to hear that for you. I can't say the same about me.
It's like, yeah, I don't want to get into it, but it's a health-seeking behavior that we had to make in 2020.
I'm proud of you. That's a big one. Okay, next on my list is unscented taper candles. I am not going to get too into it here because I've talked about them before on the podcast and I've written like a 4,000-word blog post that I will link to. But basically, lighting candles Who knew? A lot of people, turns out. But that was one of my discoveries. It's like, oh, a thing that people have been into for a really long time. I have now discovered it for myself and think it's amazing. So if you haven't gotten into it yet, highly recommend it for 2021. I have a mask recommendation. Mine is the Bagu masks, which I've probably been using for the past 3 months or so. And they're great. They have a lot of the same qualities you were describing with the sock fancy ones, which is like a little nose wire. They have a spot for a filter, adjustable ear loops, cute patterns, really durable. I'm just like such a fan. I've tried a lot of masks this year and those ones have really risen to the top as some of the best.
I like the Bagu ones because I haven't bought them yet, but I always mean to. And the thing I really like about them is that they have a separate like piece of fabric for where your nose goes.
Yes.
I mean, it's part of the mask, but it's like when the pandemic first started, we got masks that were just sort of like a piece of cloth. And it turned out to like, it's like, do you want to cover your nose or do you want to like cover the bottom of your mouth? Because you can't have both. And the masks that have a special spot for your nose are like great.
Yeah. And these actually have they have a piece of fabric at the top and at the bottom. So you've got one to like cradle your chin and one to go over your nose, which just feels way more secure. So that the part that's covering your nose and mouth is essentially like really tucked in. So it feels very
great.
Good. Yeah. I think you'd probably like them. And then the last recommendation I have is what I'm going to describe as house clogs, because multiple brands will work here. So this was another like thing I was kind of getting into at the end of last year, which was I asked my mom for some Crocs for Christmas. I don't know if you know this, Sally, but my mom is a real Crocs head in a way that is like pretty incredible. Like she can tell you like, these Crocs are limited edition. They don't make them anymore. She had to like look really hard for them. She has so many pairs of Crocs for all these different occasions. It's really wild.
We have to have your mom on the show for multiple reasons. One of them is Crocs.
Yeah. She could be a Crocs influencer. It's really, really wild. Yeah. So I asked for a pair of like fleecy lined ones because I was like, I need slippers, but I want something a little bit more durable than like a soft slipper that's going to get gross. And I was also feeling like, oh, if I'm up doing a lot of chores, my knees and back are getting sore. Like I want something with some like that feels supportive. So I got those. Great shoe for the beginning of the pandemic. I ended up getting a pair that's like an outdoor pair to slip on when I take my dog out, and then an indoor pair. They're great chore shoes. You can get them wet or dirty. They're easily cleaned. So that kind of kicked things off. And then maybe in like late spring, I got a pair of Calzeros, which are just like hot Crocs. They're just like the next evolution of Crocs. They have a little bit of a higher heel, but they don't feel like you're wearing heels. They're beloved by nurses and by chefs. I have a blue, like this blue marble pair that's so pretty. Again, I like love these shoes so much, even more than Crocs, actually. So I wore those all summer. Again, I love them so much. I got an outdoor pair so that I could like, this has nothing to do with the pandemic. I just like to have like not wear shoes in the house. So like, essentially slippers is great.
These are great.
And then since then I got a pair of Danskos fairly recently. And then just for Christmas, my girlfriend got me a pair of Birkenstocks that are like the covered toe kind. So you know, I've come a long way since my first pair of Crocs last year, but ultimately it's just like, you got to have shoes to wear indoors that are supportive, that have a grippy bottom, because household injuries are no joke, as you know, as a lover of safety, Sally, I know you'll appreciate this, and that are like supportive for your knees and back and your whole body. So find your perfect house clogs. You won't regret it.
These are great. I had never heard of Calzeros, but I actually do recognize them as things that people who stand for a really long time but need to be comfortable wear. And I totally could see myself getting into these. Awesome. I mean, I think we did it. That's like 2020 in a nutshell.
Yeah. In a walnut shell.
In a walnut shell cat litter.
Yep.
Now that we've done that, Rachel, let's talk about a nice thing to end on.
Well, I have talked about this in the past, but I'm going to do one more reminder since you guys will be listening to this show on New Year's Eve or potentially, well, that's when it's airing. If you don't have any plans for tonight or if you have a little extra time today, I highly recommend spending the last day of the year or later. Do it this weekend if you don't get to it. Making a list of all of the nice things that happened to you this year. It's something I've done in years past. It can be, at first you're going to be like, nothing good happened to me this year. You'd be surprised. Like no thing is too small to put on the list. If you can't think of anything, look through your photos on your phone, look through your email, look through your calendar. You will be reminded of like all of the great shows that you watched or things you listened to or just like new friends you made or really positive experiences you've had. It just is so affirming, especially at the end of a bad year, more than ever, to be like, oh no, like there were a lot of good things. It's sort of similar to making a gratitude list, but it's more of like celebrations versus things you're specifically grateful for. And I am not a fan of New Year's Eve. I think it's like very overwhelming and stressful. And if you want to stay in, but like still feel like you honored the holiday in some way, making a list of all of the wins from this year is my best recommendation.
I love that. It also feels like a less overwhelming task than things I have gratitude for, because there's something, you know, no shade to gratitude practices. I understand how important and great they are, but I think there are some times where it's like hard to get in the mindset of like feeling gratitude, even though technically you have things to be grateful for, but like a list of nice things that happen to you feels so much more like within my reach.
Yeah. And I think, again, I can't stress enough that like it is even more helpful to do this in a year that was bad. Like that's when I started doing this in my worst years. And that was really helpful because it does sort of clear away that darkness even for a minute and remind you that you had some wins, even if they were really tiny.
Hell yeah. I love that. My nice thing to end on is a Spotify playlist called My Life is a Movie. It has about 50 songs and it has like, it has The Zombies, it has Tears for Fears, Cocteau Twins, Mazzy Star, Fleetwood Mac, Billy Joel, Crowded House. I mean, just a real like melange of different artists. And the tagline for the playlist is every main character needs their soundtrack. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like a bunch of like quietly cinematic songs. Mm-hmm. We're often like, I don't know if you guys relate to this, Rachel, but like whenever we put on music, we're like, what's a gentle thing we can put on? I think we've been saying that since like basically February. Like, and this playlist isn't necessarily like gentle per se, but it's like light. There's like a lightness to it and nothing is like too loud or too hard. And it just kind of makes me feel like it kind of does make you feel like you're the main character in a movie, and it's really fun. It's really evocative. It's like it moves without being like super intense. So I highly recommend it. A lot of the songs on it were familiar to me, but a lot of them weren't. And the ones that weren't like quickly became faves. So My Life is a Movie, and we will link to it in the show notes.
Great. I'm excited to check that out. Well, Sally, I think that does it for Oh, I Like That 2020. We'll be back in 2021.
Rachel, I'm not going to say I'll see you next year because I'm not a dad, but I think you know that I want to say it.
Yeah, you're saying it in your heart, and I like that about you.
And also kind of with my voice.
Yeah.
All right. So yeah, thank you for listening to this episode of Oh, I'd Like That. Please rate us and review us wherever you listen to podcasts. And thank you for spending this part of 2020 with us. It's been really awesome to get to know you all through your emails and your DMs. Please continue to get in touch with us.
You can follow us on Twitter at Oh, I Like That Pod, and you can email us at ohilikethatpod@gmail.com. You can also follow the two of us on Twitter. I'm at @the_REWM and Sally is at @SallyT.
Oh, I Like That is produced by Rachel and Sally and edited by Lucas. Amber Seeger, aka Rocket Orca on social media, designed our logo.